The Aspen Art Museum celebrated turning 40 years old this past weekend with an appearance by artist Richard Tuttle. And Aspen Times arts editor Andrew Travers has been doing a lot of research and writing about the museum. He joins me next on Booked. Thanks for speaking to Katie and Kay, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
So tell us about your essay, Directly Ahead, the Aspen Art Museum, 1979 to 2019.
So the essay is essentially the full history of the museum from the beginning in 1979 up until today. To write it, I had full access to the museum archives, which was a great joy in digging back into those early days in the late 1970s when it was sort of born out of sort of the late dropout hippie era of Aspen as sort of an upstart by a bunch of really motivated, really talented artists who wanted to make a contemporary art museum for Aspen. Up through the 80s and sort of the boom of high-end contemporary art collectors in Aspen and the influence that they had on the museum as an institution, into the tenure of Heidi Zuckerman, who for the last 14 years has led it to become sort of really a world-class, world-recognized contemporary art institution. The thing that was really fascinating about it was the way it sort of tells the story of the town of Aspen and its evolution over the last 40 years. You think of a history of a museum and you think of it as sort of an exhibition history, right? It doesn't sound necessarily like a really dynamic, fun read. But this, I think because it's kind of, because Aspen is so weird and because we fight about so many interesting things, there's a lot of meat there and a lot to dig into in terms of the way that the museum reflected the town, its concerns, its evolutions over these last four decades.
In your reporting at the Aspen Times, you already have covered the Aspen Art Museum, of course, over the last several years. When did you first begin reporting at the Times?
Yeah, I should have started there. The book builds upon the reporting I've done on the museum going back to 2012, which I was at the Aspen Daily News at the time. I moved over here to the Times in 2014. But in that capacity, I've covered just about every opening at the museum. I've interviewed, all the major artists who've come through there and sort of really stayed close to the place and paying attention to what's happening there covered very closely the birth of the new building in downtown Aspen, which opened here in August 2014.
Well, we'll talk more about that, but I want to ask you about this access you had to the museum's archives. Tell us more of what that meant for you to dig into this research, not only annual reports and slides of past exhibitions. What else did you have access to?
Yeah, I mean, it's really a reporter's or historian's dream in that, there was internal communications communication between two board members or potential donors and that kind of thing. It was really interesting to sort of see the way that the museum told its own story over the years. Also, the museum in recent years collected oral histories of people who had worked there over all those 40 years, including, board members, staff members, former directors, and that kind of thing. So it was just a trove of material and really really interesting. And there was nothing that was blocked off for me, which I credit the museum for that. They weren't looking to make me do some kind of spin or leave anything out. One thing that was interesting about the archive was there was basically a hole in the early 1990s where there's so much material on every other period, and then essentially there's like these basically empty boxes where normally there would be all this stuff, which led me to the archives here at the Aspen Times and the Aspen Historical Society. And what I learned was that the early 1990s was a time of extreme internal tumult and near death for the Aspen Art Museum, which is hard to imagine these days. But there was they went through three directors in the matter of about a year. There was a staff revolt, essentially, where they took out classifieds in the Aspen Times saying, as sort of mock classifieds, saying, we need we're looking for a new board and a new director and people who know something about art. And it was all very public and very really crazy. And essentially went down to no staff, essentially no board. But it was at that point in 1992 when a number of sort of high-profile international art collectors who had settled in Aspen got involved. And these are people who are still involved with it today and sort of really shaped the place since the early 1990s. People like Susan Marks, Stefan Edlis, Nancy Magoon and her late husband, Bob Magoon. Mm-hmm. So that was fascinating. Piece of something that actually wasn't in the archive, but really told the story in its absence.
My guest is Aspen Times Arts editor Andrew Travers, who has spent much of the past several months working on a history of the Aspen Art Museum. The new essay, book-length essay, is out now. It's called Directly Ahead, The Aspen Art Museum, 1979 to 2019. And with the 40th anniversary events happening last weekend and the 15th Art Crush, it's really an exciting time in the history of the museum. I want to talk to you more about the present and how we got here, but first, go back to what it was like in the beginning. It's changed so much since the early days, and you mentioned this sort of fallow time in the early 90s, but how did it come together in the late 70s and early 80s? Was this always meant to be a nonprofit? Did they know that they would be a place that people could visit for free? What was the model when it started?
Yeah, fascinating and sort of the kind of thing that just couldn't happen in today's Aspen, in that the building was a former hydroelectric plant on the banks of the Roaring Fork River, built in 1888, I believe, and had been the Holy Cross Electric building for years and fallen into disrepair. The city of Aspen bought it along with some other dilapidated old Victorian era buildings around town and was trying to figure out what to do with it. So they, tried to form a citizen committee, and a couple of very enterprising young artists here in Aspen basically packed a committee to say that we're going to get on this committee and we're going to say that this should be a contemporary art museum. So that was Richard Carter, who's still around and actually has a gallery in Aspen now, Missy Thorne and Diane Louie. And so they basically got on the committee, pushed to make it a contemporary art museum. And the model then, sort of the key decision they made was to make it non-collecting. They actually founded it not as the Aspen Art Museum, but the Aspen Center for Visual Art. The idea was we're not going to spend money on acquisitions and that kind of thing. We're just going to be a space where we can bring in sort of the best and the new and be really nimble in not having to, raise funds to buy and amass collections. So that was sort of a key decision there. One of the great things that sort of I learned about in my research that grew out of that early time and sort of that sort of late hippie era for Aspen in the late 70s going into the early 1980s was the museum sponsored something called the Aspen Art Cart Derby, which cool. I think the best comparison today would be the kind of vehicles that you see people bringing out to Burning Man, right? These sort of elaborate devices that you can move around on. And artists and locals built these things and they raced them from basically the bottom of Lift 1 on Aspen Mountain down the really steep road below it. It just became this huge community event with just people just going, all out, making these insane and way too fast vehicles that they would race down the hill there. And a lot of folks that are still around, people like Harry Teague, I think, won it a couple times. Harry Teague, the great local architect. It was a real scene. And early on, they were very successful early on. The first show there in June 1979 was called American Portraits of the 60s and 70s. And sort of this upstart group of local artists was able to get people like Chuck Close, Christo, there was Willem de Kooning was in there, Lichtenstein was in there, Andy Warhol was in there, Robert Mapplethorpe was in there. Sort of right from the start, the model clearly worked in terms of attracting sort of the newest and most exciting of contemporary art.
And so as the museum has changed, so has Aspen. Why has the success of the art museum and controversy over its new building been so tied to concerns over growth, development, and economic inequality in the city?
Yeah, fascinating. You know, looking back on the history of sort of that conflict. You know, the fight over development is sort of the fight in modern Aspen, right? And always has been. And surprisingly, I found that through the years, the museum has sort of been drawn into that, sort of unwittingly in a lot of ways. I wrote a great deal about an artist named Donald Lipsky, who in 1988 through the museum did an installation on Aspen Mountain called Beacon Interrogator, which was basically a bunch of massive strips of mylar that were on the mountain, and they sort of reflected into town. And that was a time when Aspen was really in the midst of a lot of change some sort of fierce battle over the future of the town. You know, that old idea that was a bumper sticker in the 60s of, you know, to sell Aspen or save it. And folks went and tore the thing down in the middle of the night. And there was immediately afterward, the Aspen Times devoted its editorial pages entirely to this incident and called it out as, you know, sort of a turning point for Aspen, that, you know, people aren't talking to each other. They're just, you know, fighting over these issues. And taking it out on, you know, art, which really has nothing to do with it. And sort of that's continued through the years since then, that, you know, the art museum has sort of been caught in the middle of these development battles.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the development approval itself had raised some hackles around town, largely because before it was approved, it was rejected by voters here in Aspen, the museum on a different site, on Galena Plaza, which is now going to be the new city offices that are taking over the space that would have been the museum that was on the ballot in 2009. Now, I bring all of that sort of city politics stuff up because what I found in my research and sort of looking at things like letters to the editor and sort of the conversation around town at the time was that whenever the museum has been caught up in controversy, it's never rarely been about the art inside of the museum. It's been about sort of this external stuff and about the town. So like in 2009, when the museum went to voters and asked for the approval was actually just to let the city negotiate a price for the site to build on what is public land. But, you know, it was seen as, you know, approval of, you know, do we want the museum to move into a bigger, you know, bigger building or not? The trouble that folks had with it was not really about, you know, the art inside the museum. It was really about kind of the city. You know, this came after a series of controversial issues with the city council, you know, overpaying for land to try to build affordable housing and that kind of thing, and it was sort of a mistrust in local officials. So I found it really interesting that when, you know, the museum has been caught up in these controversies, as it sort of often has, it's really been about the art or the exhibitions or the kinds of things that we hear about often in bigger cities about museums and displays and controversial art. Like Aspen doesn't have a problem with nudity or transgressive issues or that kind of thing in their artwork. You know, they have a problem with buildings, and that tends to be what we fight about around here, and that's what we fought about the Aspen Art Museum.
That's Andrew Travers, arts editor of Aspen Times. His new book-length essay, Directly Ahead, The Aspen Art Museum, 1979 to 2019, is out now. And talk about how the museum is viewed in the wider art world. It's a non-collecting art museum, as you said, with now a substantial annual budget. It's free for visitors, and the rooftop cafe is an attraction, even for someone who's not there for the exhibits throughout much of the year. But the Aspen Art Museum has an international reputation now, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's in terms of the curatorial program, it's really in conversation with sort of the major contemporary art institutions like the Los Angeles County Museum of Art or the MoMA or the Guggenheim or something like that. the caliber of the shows that they're bringing in and artists are the kinds of shows that would be in those kinds of institutions. In my research, I think it was interesting to see in about 2006 there was the director noted that you know the museum was so excited because they had been in the Aspen Times twice in that month, it's just a sign of how far it's come even since then that you know today it wouldn't be unusual for them to be in the New York Times twice in a month. They're operating on that level where their shows are being reviewed by Art Forum and those kind of the places that look at the major art museums and galleries in the world.
And what does that mean for residents here? I mean, KD&K listeners, if people have not been paying close attention to the museum, what have they been missing?
Yeah, that's a great question. As you mentioned, it's free, and there are three levels of galleries there with rotating shows. Usually it's ended up being about 18 a year since they moved into the new building 5 years ago. And there are also a ton of public programs in there, which have grown over the years from a lot of education programming, which earned the museum some national accolades just a few years ago. In 2017, the museum won the National Medal for Museum and Library Service, which is the highest honor in the country for community service for libraries and museums. And that's tied to their education and access programs, which work to engage people, not only school children and the kinds of folks you expect to be a part of that, but they've made a real effort to sort of redefine access and to make efforts to bring people in who might feel intimidated by contemporary art or who wouldn't necessarily go in there. So, that's everything from hosting concerts to sort of participatory, avant-garde art experiences. Like last year, the artist Allison Knowles staged her Make a Salad performance, which she has done all over the world for decades, where she makes just this massive salad on a floor on a tarp as a piece of performance art, and then invites everyone who's there to eat it with her. There's always some way to engage and find your way in, the work is always always new, often challenging.
Yeah, let me ask you about that, Andrew, because for me, I happen to have very conservative taste in visual art. So I really like landscapes and photography. Okay, so so I see a pile of newspapers and think, oh, that who cares, you know? But that doesn't mean that I don't root for a modern art museum, right? So what do you say to people who think that, I'm open-minded enough to be a fan of the museum, even if I don't like a given show, right? But what do you say to those who say, so much modern art, doesn't matter to me? What's your response to people that are sort of critics of the modern art style?
Yeah, I mean, I think basically you don't know until you see it. It's one of the elements of free admission that I think really works in that, you can walk in there, walk through the galleries, and you may just not connect with some of the more conceptual weirder stuff in there, but then also you might, or you might see something that surprises you, and that's why they do the free admission, I think, because they want people to find out for themselves whether this stuff works for them.
Well, I have not had a chance yet to read your book-length essay, as listeners might have guessed, since it just came out. How can people get their own hands on a copy of Directly Ahead, The Aspen Art Museum, 1979 to 2019 by Andrew Travers?
Yeah, so it's on sale at the Aspen Art Museum shop. They just got all the copies this weekend for the big 24-hour party. And I should note, the essay is inside of a book that is titled Something Greater, and includes more than my essay.
Right.
It also includes a short statement from Shigeru Ban, the architect who built the museum, and a Q&A between director Heidi Zuckerman and the artist Doug Aitken, a full exhibition history that's illustrated from the 40 years of the museum, and also a few excerpts of those oral histories that I mentioned earlier from folks who played a role in the museum over the years.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you. You've had full access to the archives, including internal correspondence, donor letters, annual reports, oral histories, the slides of the past exhibitions. Is there anything else that you haven't mentioned that that whether or not it made it into your essay, that our listeners want to know about? What's something, a surprise or a nugget that you discovered in your research?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think just one thing that that was a joy to dig into that I haven't gotten to talk about here yet is the Art in Unexpected Places program.
Oh yeah,
which it was launched in February 2006 with the artist Yutaka Sone rolling two massive pair of dice down the super pipe at Buttermilk. And that project overall, I think it was just so fascinating to look into, and just sort of the how the ideas for how to engage the public outside of the museum, how to work on the mountain, you know, what to put on lift tickets when they started that partnership with the Aspen Ski Company. That side of it was really fascinating, about the way they made those kind of choices, and certainly the logistics for something like rolling a dice down the half pipe was a pretty fascinating thing to look into.
Aspen Times arts editor Andrew Travers, hope to have you back on KD&K again soon. Congrats on the release of your work, and thanks for speaking to KD&K.
Thank you for having me, Gavin.